Welcome to the Expanded Podcast with your host, Lacey Phillips. As a leading manifestation advisor with a process that's, well, radically different from the old New Age model, mine is rooted in psychology, neuroscience, and my energetic gifts. Therefore, I created this podcast to help you expand your subconscious limiting beliefs about the potential of deserving the manifestations you're calling in. In each episode, we'll walk through my expanders, a term in my manifestation formula signaling the people that we admire that already embody, have, or are successful in what we are looking to call in. These are the people that we witness through our mirror neurons on a subconscious level that expand us into knowing that our manifestations are possible as well. Especially when we hear about their background, their upbringing, their trials and tribulations, and any of their pitfalls that they had to experience along the way. Therefore, you're tuning into this podcast series to show your subconscious that anything you desire is possible. And by pressing play, you've already started the process of manifesting it. If you enjoy this episode, please leave us our review, comment, and share it with your fellow manifester that's struggling or could really benefit from the information that you're about to learn. Today's guest, Erica Sheedy Cohen, is a doula, author, co-founder of Loom, which is an educational space and a support space for those looking to start a family, have support around birth, education, sexual education, reproductive education, menstruation education. It's really one of the most inclusive, progressive, and I would say important centers that exist today. And in this episode, you will really resonate if you are still finding your path, if you identify as a potential educator, an entrepreneur, if you're curious about expanding into those things, if you've felt on the fringe, lost. You will really find everything that Erica has to show to be incredibly inspiring, as well as some of the self-tools she uses that has helped her gain clarity and get through those tougher moments and expand further. I love her word for expander. It's comp, her comparison. So we really speak a lot of the same language, and I think you will get so much out of this episode. Also, if you haven't had a chance to check out her episode on Supported, where we go deeper into manifesting a family, menstruation education, hormonal balance, just really, really insightful, interesting information that's all around. Go ahead and check that out. We'll have the link below. Otherwise, kick back and enjoy this episode, listening to Erica's journey from South Africa to becoming one of the youngest, most successful entrepreneurs that I know.
I have today Erica Sheedy Cohen, who is a doula, also co-founder of Loom and author of Nurture, which is an incredible book to support family, the experience of pregnancy, pre-pregnancy, post-pregnancy, and also at Loom is an educational, I don't know what to call it, like a compound. It's like an incredible compound that houses, I'm going to let you take over all of the different offerings you guys have there and the support and community you're creating.
Yeah, so pretty much Loom provides education for reproductive empowerment. So be it menstrual cycles or, you know, sexual wellness to pregnancy, parenting is kind of our arc. So we're really looking at supporting people as they get more empowered around reproduction and as they navigate their pregnancies and become parents.
And one component that I find the most inspiring about it, as many layers, is how you service every community and every person. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, so even when we think about reproductive empowerment, what I probably didn't mention is just also supporting people who are not necessarily planning on being parents or people who have you know, experience pregnancy loss, whether it's a miscarriage or abortion, we have, you know, support to help them navigate that experience. And then also we're really focused on supporting all communities. So, you know, LGBTQIA community included. We have a class called KIN that's all about helping support families that are, or people anyway, that are thinking about growing their families. And so I think our society right now is just so fluid and it's changing so much. And I think it's important that that fluidity is recognized in the kind of health education space for sure. And then also in the kind of clinical space too. So we're definitely trying to, you know, meet the need and, you know, and bridge that gap as much as we can.
And something else inspiring that I know has always been close to your heart is a certain organization that you give back to and work with. Can you talk about that a little bit too?
Yeah, so I've worked with a couple different organizations, but I think the one you're speaking to is probably Alliance of Moms.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I've worked with them probably for the past 2 or 3 years. They're here in Los Angeles and they provide kind of prenatal support to young women that are currently pregnant or parenting in the foster system. So through their kind of largest initiative of the year called Raising Baby and kind of smaller efforts throughout the year, I've gone in and provided kind of one-on-one support to some of the girls in the program, or just larger educational classes that are about just taking care of yourself, taking care of your baby, kind of in that experience. But I think I've always, as a person, just been very orientated to what the wider community needs around that experience, whether they're in the foster system, whether they are, you know, LGBTQIA, whether they are, you know, incarcerated. That's kind of how I started off my doula work, was working with people that were in the jail system in San Francisco. So I think no matter where you are, what your socioeconomic status is, we all need education about our health. And so that's kind of the motivating force behind what we're doing at Loom, is just trying to get that to as many people as possible and at the same time build community for people in that process.
Love it. And so inspired. Let's start getting into you yourself and working our way back into all of the wonderful things you're up to. Going into, what is your cultural background and upbringing?
So my parents were both born in Nigeria, immigrants. So I grew up in the States. And then, well, when I say I grew up in the States, until I was like probably 10 or 9 or so, between a couple of different states, but primarily West Coast and the South. We were in Florida for a little bit and California. And then we moved to South Africa. And I, you know, lived there for about 10 years. And so, you know, living there definitely shaped a big part of how I see myself. And I think the fusion of my parents' kind of Nigerian culture and then living in the United States and then going back to Africa, but not being the Africa that they knew. And my parents at the time, by the time we moved, they were already separated. And so my father anyway, mm-hmm. Not the Africa that he identified with. I definitely feel like my upbringing was very multicultural and had a lot of influences and nuances, but I feel like I got to have this really amazing exposure to African culture through living there, but also we would go back to Nigeria a lot. And then this exposure to kind of European culture, because we would travel a lot mm-hmm. there when we lived in South Africa. And then obviously being born here, having that kind of American exposure as well. So I have like three big like kind of pillars of influence, which is why I feel like my approach is always so
wide.
It's just, there's always been kind of these, you know, different downloads coming in. And like, you know, in South Africa, it's like homeopathy was permissive. And so I've been doing that. I've been doing rescue remedies since like middle school.
Totally.
And like a B12 shot was like a thing everyone was doing in high school. You know, it's like,
totally.
So in IV, you know, administration of, you know, not just medication, but like restorative IV infusions, long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's all from being there. So, and I think just kind of how I see the world is always through kind of all of those lenses. Kind of, if you think of a microscope, you can kind of like flip in one lens and one more and one more and one more. And so when I'm looking at things, I'm seeing a lot of different through lines as opposed to just one.
I love it. It's so lucky and so special. in the different, each time you were living in the different areas, were they small towns or big cities or mixed?
There definitely were a mix. You know, we lived in Durban for a while in South Africa, which is kind of like a small beach town. I would say it's kind of like for LA or Los Angeles, maybe like Manhattan Beach or something like that, like small, but like there's a larger city not too far away. I went to college in Cape Town, so that's much more of a bigger city. So it was variable. My dad always liked to be near some kind of water, but like also close to like an urban center. So I never really lived in too small of a city.
Interesting. Okay. That time that you spent the gap on the floor crying, the worst time.
Tell me, say that again.
Yeah. So the time of your life where you might have spent that little gap on the floor crying.
Huh.
You're down and out, you're bottom.
Huh. Probably I'd say maybe a year and a half after college, just not really knowing kind of what the next step was going to be, just because I had so many skills. Like I went to culinary school, I went to college and got my undergrad in art history and visual culture and media and communications, and just not really knowing kind of how I was going to fuse those skills together to make something of myself that made sense, you know.
So many people, even that I work with, are going through that now, that what's my purpose? For you, what was being triggered during that time, if you can relate back to that experience?
Well, I think, you know, I think for me it was just, again, not really having good comps, like a good comparable for myself, just because it was far earlier than now, in so far as like the idea of being a multi-hyphenate is like a really normal thing now. Back then, I think there was still the idea of like you are X or you are Y. You're a real estate agent, or you're a doctor, or you're like a, you know, you're a
teacher.
There wasn't a lot of nuance. So I think I was wrestling with, should I just kind of contract and just be this one thing so that, you know, people can understand me, I can understand myself within the paradigm that we exist. So I think that was really what was hard, was just like, I didn't feel comfortable, but I wasn't sure how I was going to make it better. Yeah.
Sure. And I think that's what so many people are still struggling with right now. I feel like every millennial must have gone through that, and we created the hyphenated experience.
I know. We're just like, this is the thing now. Like,
this is
fine.
What we do.
Yeah.
We podcast, blog, and teach manifestation, and like whatever, like all the things.
I know. And at least now this is like, I feel the environment's so much more supportive of that. But back then, if you have a couple of things you like to do, there wasn't really anything letting you know that that was okay.
And that it was possible.
Yeah.
Yeah. And for you, give us a little bit about the road to clarity, when you started to really understand. Because I know that those periods, and for you, I think it did take a little bit to find that. And again, trying different avenues. How did you receive your download of clarity? How did it come for you?
Well, I think it still comes. I don't feel like it's even done, you know. But I think for me, once I kind of did my doula training and, you know, started working with clients, the work came easily, and I kind of had set myself up that way because I was working at this really fantastic parenting pregnancy resource in San Francisco called Natural Resources. And, you know, I had taken my training there. I had then been working the floor and working retail, and so I was meeting people who were becoming clients. And so I kind of had direct access to grow my business pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. And then when I started doing the work, notice how much it didn't feel like work. And I was like, this is a good sign. And it was also, I was making money from it as well. And so there was this meeting of, you know, comfort and then financial remuneration for that comfort. And so that to me really equated that this could be a vocation, you know. So I just kept kind of leaning into that, as opposed to kind of leaning away from it. So, you know, I got very singular, which was important. I already had like a hybridized skill set, but when I found the thing that was working, I became singular within that thing.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's like such a takeaway for so many people, is really, really following those leads and going with those. That for you too, I always love to ask this question, during that period of, you know, sort of confusion after school to when you started to kind of find your flow in the doula work, letting that take you where it takes you. Where was your self-worth during that time? If you were to kind of...
Well, you know, I've always had a pretty high sense of self-worth. I mean, although my family of origin is extremely complicated, and most people's are, I think my parents did a really good job. And I think that it has a lot to do with Nigerian culture, too. There is this sense of kind of upward mobility and rigor kind of built into how we see ourselves and how we kind of reflect one another. Mm-hmm. There's definitely this kind of DNA imprint of like of our ability to excel.
Yeah.
It's in there. So, you know, my parents always told me that I, you know, had something to offer, and I think they really reinforced that part of myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I was actually saying this the other day, I am a really odd person because my ego and my, and kind of that, I think what people would probably describe as like narcissistic edge, mm-hmm. are not there, mm-hmm. for me. I have this kind of inner metric of internal gratification or internal acknowledgement.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think that probably has something to do with being parentified really young. Mm-hmm. I did have to do a lot of caretaking from a very young age. And I think because of that, I'm very good at telling myself, you did a good job.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's wonderful.
So being able to like kind of almost self-parent,
mm-hmm.
Really helped like make sure that my self-worth was not really ever in question,
mm-hmm.
because also the self-worth piece for me was survival. If I didn't think I was worthwhile,
mm-hmm.
I don't know if I'd still be here.
Absolutely.
Just given everything that I've had to be exposed to. So that's the thing too, especially for me, like with social media and how everyone like thrives off how they're being seen and likes and all of that. And I mean, you know, sure, everyone likes a new wash of followers and likes and all of that, but I don't exist for external gratification.
Mm-hmm.
It's just never been important to me. And also, I got very early on in life realized that that was not always going to be there. And
mm-hmm.
so if I was going to look for that, I would really be at a deficit for like
mm-hmm.
the rest of my life. So, the self-worth piece, I don't feel like has ever been in question, but it's not because I have some like special secret sauce.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's just my background forced me to figure out a different way of
survival.
Yeah.
And when you, for somebody who's in the space of not giving themselves, you know, that pep talk or congratulating themselves or seeing themselves in a higher respect, what would be your tips for the person, like you said, self-parenting and being able to tell yourself you did a good job? What would be your tips to the person who doesn't have that resource or that skill internally?
I mean, I think it's just to start doing it.
Yeah. And what does that sound like for you, if you were to give an example?
I think it's just, you know, also I think it's choosing to do things that you love so that your ability to assess enjoyment is easier,
mm-hmm.
you know. So, for example, you know, if you love to cook, but you are, you know, kind of still learning your way around that craft, just, you know, making something that you know you can make well, that isn't super complicated, and doing that really regularly as opposed to trying to do more complicated recipes every time you're in the kitchen and putting yourself in a situation where you know that you probably are not going to thrive.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of giving yourself more of a testing ground to get used to being like, I did this thing really well again, I did
mm-hmm.
it really well again. And so you can start to basically create almost like an experiment where
mm-hmm.
you can keep getting the same result a
yeah.
few times in order to kind of better anchor yourself as you start to take on more difficult things that, you know, might be harder to find, you know, the joy or that congratulatory, you know, energy. So I think that would probably be the best advice that I could give. I haven't really sat and extrapolated out that kind of inner speak to outer speak,
mm-hmm.
but I do feel like it's the practice and it's these very small steps, you know, and it's like, you know, if you make the bed, just being like, wow, I really made the bed really well today.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you, you know, take a shower and you like wash your face and you're like, oh, I really got in there. Like my face is really clean.
Mm-hmm.
It's just these very simple things that
They're
you're
positive.
Doing very small things you don't typically even want to give yourself acknowledgement for, like, wow, I just had a really good bowel movement.
Wow, like, great, which is like so important.
Just very small acknowledgements of these things we're doing on a regular basis, I think, is so key, because when you take them as, you know, a part of your kind of autonomic functioning and you're not really paying very much attention, it takes very loud, a very kind of huge situations or big flashing lights to get you to see yourself.
Yeah.
And that's not really sustainable because we don't always exist in that type of space.
It's called being high.
It's all small.
It's
all small.
Yeah.
It's opening the door. It's closing the door.
Yeah.
It's, you know, going to bed. It's waking up. So it's just finding joy in those things and congratulating yourself for your ability to do that. Because just being healthy and being alive in itself is like very profound, mm-hmm. you know. So I think I don't typically tap in that deeply to how I'm existing, but there is a lot of that.
It's amazing.
It's a lot of these very small, like, pats on the back.
That's incredible.
Mm-hmm.
I also like what you said too about, you know, if you're cooking and that's what you enjoy, to make something that you're good at and then increase, you know, after you reinforce that a bit. I mean, I kind of even did that. I would, like, when I lived in West Hollywood or things like that, to just reinforce so that I was, you know, not as pretty or this or that, to quintessential, you know, society, I would go find my tribe. I'd go find the place where I felt good in.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is another great tip to what you're saying, is like, continue to immerse yourself or insert yourself where you're good and where you feel good.
Yeah.
And then increase on that.
Exactly. And like, if you're inviting people over for dinner, like, make the same thing over and over again.
The one you're good at.
Different people.
Yeah. So you can enjoy and not stress.
Yeah. And you can enjoy the feedback of, oh, that's so great. And the more you hear that, the more reinforced you feel, you know?
I love that. That's incredible. The job that sucked your soul. Why? And how you finally left it and moved on.
Let's see. Oh, I've had so many different jobs. Probably retail. It's always
a big
hard
one for a lot of people.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about it. I'm like, that's probably the one. Just, you know, selling clothes.
Mine was
waitressing. It's funny, but also truthfully, I interned in PR for, you know, almost a year when I was in New York, and I kind of pulled myself out of that too because I just didn't feel like in resonance with that world. But I've been pretty lucky in that I've been able to, you know, kind of be doing work that I feel passionate about. So, like, the soul sucking, you know, hasn't really been a feature for mm-hmm. me that much, because I've been also self-employed for such a long time too.
Totally.
So it's like client to client, as opposed to, especially almost like on 10 years now, it's like client to client as opposed to like this one job.
Yeah, job that, after job.
Yeah.
Brings you, you know, unhappiness. Everyone plays the fool in love. What time was it for you when you lost all self-respect? What did that look like, if you have?
I mean, I feel like my early 20s were a really interesting time. Interestingly, have always had big relationships,
mm-hmm.
you know,
too.
Big, long relationships. And so I definitely had a break kind of in my early 20s where I just kind of shed all of that and really was much more experimental. And I think I felt probably out of integrity when I wasn't really paying close attention to who I was letting have access to me,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I remember kind of after that, I, you know, went celibate for 6 months, and I kind of called in what kind of partner I wanted, and I got very focused and intense about it. And then started online dating. And this was what I've been with my partner now for almost 8 years. Mm-hmm. So started online dating and went out there, and, you know, within 2 months, like, found him. And we met when OkCupid was still in beta. Mm-hmm. It was like, it was really weird to actually tell people you were meeting online. So yeah, I think early 20s, breakdown, celibacy for 6 months, just clearing everything out, just on a physical and emotional level,
mm-hmm.
getting very intent about who I wanted, and then kind of going back out again.
And, love it. That's great. That's amazing. What did you learn from that time when you were clearing house and celibate? Like, what were the biggest takeaways for you that helped you attract in this partner?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, I think I just mentioned saying that I don't really thrive or kind of like live for external gratification. I think that's now kind of probably a later in life kind of realization that that is true to me at my base. But I think at the time when I was, in terms of like my partnerships, wanted to kind of pull back and reorganize, I just noticed that I was looking for a certain kind of affirmation, and that the exchange was not equitable. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I was kind of putting in a lot and not needing a lot back from the other person because I can kind of take care of myself, mm-hmm. which is like the story. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But then needing a certain kind of gratification from them and not getting it. Yeah. So it was, you know, and when I pulled back and was on my own and wasn't dating and wasn't doing anything, I really was able to kind of tap into my ability to just entertain myself. Mm-hmm. You know,
and find really true autonomy and all
yeah,
that beauty.
And just kind of turn that on, which was really fun. And I still, you know, being a really imaginative person, enjoy that kind of that alone time and that alone space.
So yeah. much. I agree.
So I'm quickly interrupting this incredible conversation, which I'm sure is bringing massive expansion your way, to share that this is a little secret offering just for you guys who are loyally tuning into this podcast. You won't find this on the blog or social media or anywhere else, but we're offering you 10% off with the code EXPANDED. That's capital EXPANDED to sign up for any course on our site and receive 10% off. And so that goes for the formula and magnetism. If you're sitting there wondering how exactly do I manifest, it's your step-by-step process. It also goes towards any of the Unblock series, all of which I always like to say help to pump up your magnetism, with Reparent and Shadow being the most important that every manifester should treat themselves to. And also the roadmaps, which are for the people who are just joining in and don't have the luxury of being able to have a session, or for the people who want to take the programs they already have far deeper in a way more navigated terrain. So enjoy that code, EXPANDED, all caps, and we're so excited to have you as a part of this community. Make sure to also tune in to Supported for extra support weekly when you have questions. Unfortunately, because that's a subscription program, we can't offer a code off on that, but it's there for you and it's cheaper than a pack of gum every month. And I made it that way for myself when I was absolutely broke and had zero support in my life so that it could be accessible for anyone. Last but not least, I hope you're enjoying the episode, and please share any manifestations that are coming from doing these workshops simply using the hashtag FNManifestations.
So we kind of talked about when you found the clarity of becoming a doula, mm-hmm. you know, of really going down that space. How did that download come in for you? Was it that you were already working at that store? Because that's something people really struggle with a lot. Like, how do I even begin to mm-hmm. sort of find my purpose? For me, it just downloaded. How does it come for you?
Well, I think, yeah, I wish I could remember exactly the moment, but I think, you know, I was doing all my nursing prerequisites because, you know, my parents were both like, you know, midwifery or obstetrics probably is a good role. I mean, good way for you to go. So why don't you like, you know, try to go the nursing route first, or at least like do that prep. And so kind of en route to doing that, I found out about doulas, and I don't know, there's something about it that just felt right. You know, I kind of had one of those, what I like to call like a whole body yes moment, where I was mm-hmm. like, oh, okay. I can, at least I can commit to inquiring into this more. But I think, like we've talked about over time, you know, it didn't feel like work, and that was a good sign, you know? And so, you know, you get multiple downloads. Mm-hmm. You get the first that gives you that push to continue inquiring.
Yeah, they keep coming.
Yeah, and then you start doing the thing, and then you kind of get this gratification and the feeling of there's flow here, and then the downloads keep coming to reaffirm that, and then the doors just keep opening, you keep meeting the right people, and
the flow.
Yeah, you can choose to not go into that. There's people who, when they start to feel like, wow, look at like this rug being rolled out for me, and there's a meal on the table, and the bath is running, and mm-hmm. the bed is made, and they're just like, you know, I really want to go to that house down the street that's ramshackled and like there's no heating and I don't know
where. The fear of success, all that kind
of stuff. So, I've always enjoyed comfort, you know, and I think that's also just the feeling of, maybe that comes from the need to survive, like wanting that. I think just knowing that this time while I'm here, I really want to get things done and, you know, having a place, and when I say place, that word's also interchangeable with a career, a vocation that feels in alignment, you know, is like the home, you know. So, you know, I wanted to get into the home, into the best home, the turnkey home, you know, kind of as quickly as I could because I knew I would want to repaint the walls, I'd want to pull out the bathroom, you know. So I think that's how I feel kind of about my career kind of as it stands. It's just I saw a really great space and it really resonated and I just moved in and I've just been room by room kind of fixing things and like sometimes I have enough money to do that, sometimes I go out and get a loan and this is a very kind of expanded metaphor, but it's like going out, bringing in the people that I need to get something done. Sometimes I can do some things myself, but realizing that it's okay to like to ask for the help that I need.
It's amazing. I love it. That's such good advice for people, especially who are right at that tipping point. For you, what inner fears did you have to overcome? Because you're one of the biggest go-getters I know at such a young age. You know, you really are on a mission and you don't let a lot get in your way. And even when I watched the whole Loom process unfolding and the times got tough, you just stuck right in. You have that grit. You just made it happen. What are the biggest inner fears you've had to overcome in order to really pursue this career and take it where you want it to go?
Well, I guess, you know, will I have enough money? That's always a big thing. So just doing what I had to do, whether it was...
You like sold your car at one point.
Yeah, I did. You know, get rid of my car or, you know, get a small loan or take on another credit card, you know. So doing what needs to be done to, you know, make sure I can feel supported enough financially to kind of take the next leap. I think also with opening a space, just I think one of the biggest fears is like, will people come, you know? So just letting that go and just doing everything that you can to create awareness around kind of what you're doing. So definitely those were probably my two biggest fears was just, can I afford to do this and will people show up? And I, did the things to make sure I could somewhat afford to do it. And then just had to trust that the people would come and do the, lay the groundwork for that to happen, which means just, you know, meeting people, making connections, continuing on with the work that I was already doing in my practice.
So essentially, if you built it, they will come.
Pretty much. If you built it with integrity and you know what it is that you're trying to create, you're not confused.
That's huge.
I think you being clear makes a really big difference. And I think we were always pretty clear on what the offering was going to be with Loom. And just for me, as just a solo provider before Loom even opened, and I think if you feel clear and you build it, then people will come.
I love that. And for you too, you're wonderful with boundaries. You always have been with boundaries and communication. What are some of the biggest boundaries you've had to put up during your career and this process of opening up a space to really get clear about your energy and your space?
Sure. I think probably one of my biggest boundaries was just with my time. There's just really not a lot of it. So I've had to just realize that although the relationships and people I really love and I do my best to make as much time as I can, knowing that really for the first year, especially this iteration of my business anyway with Loom, that I had to kind of put the business first, not forever, but for a finite period of time and just get comfortable with that. And I think doula work definitely, or my doula career set me up for that because I have been living a monastic lifestyle for a long time, which means I can't really stay out late. I don't really drink a lot. I don't really, you know, partake in, you know, psychoactive things either really that much because I would have to be ready to go anytime in the middle of the night. You know, so I already knew what it was like to be restricted. So I think it set me up for this next phase. I think for some people it's a real shock when you go from maybe a 9 to 5 to an entrepreneur lifestyle because you are like, oh, wow, I have to make all of my own schedule. I'm like, how do I do that? So I'd already had quite a few years of just kind of being my own
boss.
Mm-hmm. And so the kind of extra rigor that having our own physical space puts on top of that, I was pretty much kind of already well suited for that.
Yeah, your cat Moon had it taken care of.
Yeah.
Yes. I think I got this.
Yeah, that helped, that industrial part of me. And I like to work. I don't live to work, mm-hmm. but I do enjoy it.
Yeah. What's the most humbling thing you've experienced in your adult life?
In terms of work or relationship?
Just really humbled you,
Probably when my sister passed away. Mm-hmm. My half-sister passed away a couple years ago, and it was the first time I'd really come in contact with a life ending at a time where I was really cognizant of it. And it was really a transformational and also kind of intense experience, and it really just made me really realize the importance of life. Mm-hmm. And also just seeing like my family's response and also reactions around her passing, just gave me just a quick look mm-hmm. at, and anyone who's experienced death close to them, and some people haven't, but when you do, you see this other side of people that made me, when you said the word humble is the thing that came up for me, it just made me really have to just pull back and like find a lot of gratitude really quickly and help that maintain and stay. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes when you lose someone, you get that feeling of reprogramming for, you know, a season, and then you mm-hmm. kind of move back into your old programming. But I think what happened with her really helped me make some major shifts around how I operate. Yeah.
That's, I remember that time. I mean, you really showed up. Yeah. For everything and everyone.
Yeah.
You know, it was a very graceful period to watch you go through. All right. When was the time, or if you can pinpoint, where you figured out, I'm a badass? I know that worth is high for you, but like, I'm a badass. I'm worth it. I've broken some karma, like the family karma or whatever.
Whatever's been shifted has been shifted. I think, you know, the book and Loom opened in the same mm-hmm. month. Like the book came out, Loom opened like the 6th of October, and the book came out the 26th. So for anyone who's ever written a book or opened a business, you, I'm sure, have an understanding of the intensity of both. But to have them both happen at the same time, when they both did happen, and I was on the other side of those two dates, I was like, okay, like, yeah, I'm pretty good.
Yeah, good.
Because it was just so, just the lead up to the, you know, what needs to be done for a book to be out, and making sure like we had some initial sign-offs from the city for the space, and that, because I was project managing the whole build out and working with all these different teams and negotiating, and when I say different teams, but different teams for like the building of the space. Mm-hmm. And then I had like our actual team that was working with us on the ground that was going to be interfacing with our community and our clients. And you know, and then I still had my own relationship, and I had my own, you know, my
personal
own interior space. Yeah, yeah, so it was a lot. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it definitely was trial by fire, for sure.
Wow.
And on the other side of that, I think it definitely prepared me for kind of anything.
Yeah. And do you have tips for people who might be in the thick of something similar?
Just, like, go into autopilot. Just get it done.
Yeah.
And really set up, like, set up a cushion for yourself, kind of, like, 30 to 60 days out from the end of those cutoff dates. So whether it's a short trip or it's just 3 days off at home or a week off at home, you're not being exorbitant and spending a ton of money on some trip. Like, you just give yourself some downtime. Because the thing is, when you are in that creator space, like, function takes over. And so if you just let it do that, if you've laid all the architecture correctly, you just go in and you get it done. You like, you complete the puzzle, as opposed to kind of letting your intellect really get into the way, just really becoming a builder, like brick, mortar, brick, mortar, you know, as opposed to like, is that brick in the right place?
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
can
yeah.
someone come check this? You know,
it's just like streamlined.
Yeah, you
stuff
just
and just go.
Yeah, get into action mode and kind of look back a little bit later.
Yeah. that makes sense.
Once the plan
is set.
Take
some adaptogens or something.
Yeah. And also, I didn't actually do a lot of self-care right before the business opened. I was a maniac. Mm-hmm. I just was like, this has to be done, that has to be done. And I knew I would find myself on the other side. But now that I'm in, like, you know, the business has been open for about 8 months, 9 months now, you know, I'm back in that flow of taking really, really good care of myself. Mm-hmm. But I had done that previously to the ramp up
of
the business.
You like prepared for the birth of the business and the book.
Yeah.
I remember. Yeah. You've always had really good self-care practices.
Yeah.
Who have been your expanders, comps, or mentors, you know, would be another way to put it, that showed you that all of this is possible, the really pivotal ones?
You know, I'm trying to think to myself.
Whether authors or business models or space owners.
Well, you know, I had a really amazing mentor when I was still in college and shortly after. I worked underneath her at a contemporary art gallery in South Africa called Stevenson, and she was the photographic curator. And she kind of, that gallery anyway, represented really amazing artists like Zanele Mokgole and like Peter Hugo, who are like really prolific photographers now. And she was from Italy. And I remember right before I left the country again to come back here and kind of start setting things up, she gave me Woman That Runs With The Wolves.
Mm, totally.
And I remember we were sitting in a parking lot and she gave me this book and she was like, you're really going to need this. Mm-hmm. And she was so strong and smart and kind of nurturing at the same time and really just was no bullshit. Mm-hmm. And if anyone's ever worked in like the contemporary art space, you know, it's very calculated. It's very precise. Everything has a something that's connected to it. There's all of these kind of rules of that space, especially back then. And she just had this very disciplined approach to her work ethic and really expected me to model that, mm-hmm. but also made space to talk about kind of the emotionality or anything that was going on. And she was such a good mentor for me to kind of graft onto because mm-hmm. I loved, and actually the owner of the gallery, Michael, who was very reserved, but he had this approach to life that was so delicious. Mm-hmm. Like the space was really beautiful, the gallery space, but every day, like at 12 o'clock, he would, you know, set up staff lunch and it would be this like Mediterranean like mix of food and these like wooden bowls, this huge like bookcase in the space that we were sitting. And there's just this commitment to, we will eat lunch at this time and we will, you know, discuss what needs to be discussed in like in this fashion at this time. And there is this kind of curation of work and this curation of communication within that workspace. Mm. And yeah, that was a really formidable time in my life because I looked at this working space and I was like, this is what I want if I were to ever have my own space and to have my own, you know, team is a place that visually felt really beautiful and really made you feel better when you were there.
Sure. Ritual.
Yeah.
Still getting things done.
Exactly. And there was still this really strong work ethic, but then there was the softness in how we nourish ourselves, how people spoke to one another. So yeah, I would say my time at that gallery and my time kind of underneath Federica's kind of tutelage, mentorship, menteeship.
Amazing.
It was really a strong
time. And that's
time.
How it works. And it sounds like she was a vision holder. She could see where you were headed, though she didn't know.
Yeah, definitely. And there also was there's an intuitive I worked with for many years off and on named Sandra, who I think really was a strong influence on me as well.
Wow. Yay. I love those. They really show you what's possible and where things can go. I love it. The limiting belief you picked up that you're still working through today.
Limiting belief, probably that there isn't enough time. Mm-hmm. That would be one. And two, that, you know, in order to really enjoy life, your relationships, especially the ones that you came into this world with, have to be in perfect order. Because I do feel like that does take up a lot of energy, you know, once you're, you know, the bills have been paid, you know, like you got enough sales that month, you have all these major things are clicked in, and then you have that quiet mind, and then it's like, oh, what about, you know, my mom or my dad or this, you know, there's this desire to, you know, those primary relationships have to be perfect or healed in order for there to be full and complete enjoyment. Mm-hmm. So I think that, and that's some pretty deep circuitry to try and remove and rebuild. I mean, you can spend your whole life doing that.
Totally.
But I definitely think that's probably something I still struggle with is just how to really, really find pure enjoyment that is not mitigated by kind of where we came from.
Yeah. I love that. Oh, that's something everybody needs to hear. The most kismet thing you've ever manifested?
Probably maybe my husband.
Yeah, Jordan. It sounds like you nailed him right on the head.
Totally. on my like list of things, I put, I want him to be semi-muscular and green-eyed, da-da-da, all these like, and again, those were aesthetic qualities, but the deeper things in there, I remember saying I wanted him to have, like, you know, this knowledge of, like, of like food and like music, but like music I don't know about that he could teach me, and it's all there.
Wow, it is true. That's all there for sure. Yeah, it's amazing. All there. The thing inside of you that keeps you in motion.
Always just wanting to be better, like to be my best self. Yeah, I'm interested. I'm like, it's like I'm interested in the biohacking, the psychological hacking, the, you know, where
energetic hacking.
Yeah, just like how can I keep and how can I keep being interesting to me, me, not really anybody else. Not to say I'm not interested in other people.
No, but that's your trajectory.
Yeah, that self reinvention is really fun.
Amazing. Okay, so now I want to get into within the projects that you have going on at the space right now, because they are so progressive, and I really don't know of any other spaces that I'm aware of that offer this. What is the newest one you're most excited about?
I would say probably my roadmap periods class, my roadmap sex class.
Oh yes, let's hear about the sex class too. I mean, tell us about both, because everyone in support got to hear about the period, so I want to hear.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think just the period class is all about helping people better understand their menstrual cycle. You know, open, shut. The sex class is about shame-free, pleasure-centered sex and sexual experiences. I make space for a lot of different modalities in my life, whether it's Reiki or mediums or astrology or whatever the case may be, I do feel that a lot of the sexual space kind of leans into language that I don't think is in resonance with how people want to take in that information.
I'm right there with you. Like, you know, I mean, not to judge it, but like weightlifting from your vagina and just all this stuff. No way. It's so much more deeper even on a spiritual level that can go.
Yeah.
Like, your pure sexual energy.
Exactly. And just, you know, an understanding kind of how your body works, and especially for, you know, women or people that have, you know, female reproductive, you know, parts, just the importance of self-pleasure, what is actually going on in our anatomy, and how to ask for what you need in a sexual space, and just understanding what your arousal template looks like, what are you actually aroused by, and, you know, and cultivating more of that, really understanding orgasms and understanding what it means to truly be physically aroused, and what can we do to make that process easier, and, you know, just enjoy having sex, whether it's with yourself or someone else. So that's really what the class is about, and kind of laying it all out with really non-triggering kind of, you know, applicable integrative language, or language that you can integrate and speak to from a confident place and share with somebody else, because
amazing.
It's so important.
So needed.
Right? Without saying, and not to say I'm not into like words like yoni and you know, womb, and like,
I just think it
all
scratches
of that,
the surface.
But it scratches the surface. It's it's, we really need to be referring to the parts, you know, as they truly exist.
Yeah,
you know,
giving
the clitoris,
worth.
The vagina, you know, coming, you know, fucking, like really just use the language. Whatever language is going to feel in resonance with you, like leaning into it, as opposed to, and reclaiming
it. I love
it
dick and pussy. Yeah. Like, I love them all.
Yeah, dick, pussy, like just feeling okay saying those words, and also like talking about, you know, like, you know, how wet you were the last time you had sex, or the last time you had sex with yourself, you know, and talking about, you know,
which is on a physiological level, very
totally,
important.
Very important.
Yeah.
And so I think that's really what I'm trying to do, is just expose people to information that typically has not really been there, and to just make sex a conversation that can happen at the dinner table.
So just normalizing.
Like it's too fetishized. It really is. Mm-hmm. Like masturbation is the most normal
and therapeutic.
And it, to discuss it, it's changing now, but it definitely feels, like I said, like fetishized when it's actually just a normal thing. Mm-hmm. And I wish more people would just talk about that more, and just talk about how they're optimizing it, you know? And so that's kind of what I'm excited to really explore.
And how can people find it?
So basically the periods class, the sex class are all on Loom. So this is loom.com. Mm-hmm. And it's under our considering pathway, which is all about reproductive empowerment. Mm-hmm. And yeah, super excited about that. And I'm trying to think, is there anything else I'm really excited about?
Do you guys have, I mean, I know you must, but what are your offerings around trauma or people navigating trauma in any of this space?
Well, I think, you know, for us, because we're an educational space or, you know, an educational platform, I think the negotiation of trauma really comes in when people are able to come together and have a chance to either share their story with others in a group setting. For example, you know, we have a loss pathway where we have a two-part class called Acknowledging Loss, which is basically just around creating containment and resources for all different kinds of pregnancy loss. Mm-hmm. And we found that just the group coming together and having the chance to hear one another's experiences and have some gentle facilitation is really therapeutic in, mm-hmm. in itself.
It's since the beginning of time.
Yeah, just put people in a room and let them reflect each other. You don't need to, it doesn't need to be solution orientated. It's just the alchemy of sharing.
Totally. It's just like even on 12-step programs, that's why it's one of the biggest medicines.
Exactly.
It's tribal.
Yep. So that's really what we're trying to do. I think the piece we're kind of laying over that, though, is just the access to education and information to help normalize and reframe kind of what the experiences are to kind of inform that sharing experience. So I would say that's how we're navigating helping people around trauma. There isn't like a specific outlet or specific class that does that. We just think that that's happening kind of on a grand level or on a macro level because people are in a room learning and sharing, which in itself has, you know, a curative component to it.
Mm-hmm, I love that. Mm-hmm. And tell us about the book for anybody who's like, who it positions really well.
Yeah, I think, look, Nurture is all about kind of, you know, early pregnancy, well, pregnancy, birth, and early motherhood. So it is definitely written in a cisgender tone. Mm-hmm. So that's something just to keep in mind, especially, you know, as a queer person, I like to just kind of put that out there. Mm-hmm. I think it's wonderful for a person who's going through it, obviously, to have it. It's a reference guide. Mm-hmm. So it's nice. You don't have to move it through it in a linear fashion. I think it's also a great gift to give to somebody who's not there yet but thinking about it. And also if you have someone that you love or you're a partner of someone that's currently pregnant, it's a great book to read as well. I found a lot of partners have picked it up and enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. And sometimes are reading it before their pregnant partner is even reading it.
Wow, fantastic.
So it's I tried to make it as you know, collaborative as possible, at least the reading experience. It wouldn't just be a book that someone would feel like, well, it's only for me. You can definitely share it with your, you know, your partner and your community too.
I love that.
Yeah.
And lastly, touching on that, identifying as a woman, you know, queer and open out in this space as an entrepreneur, but also dealing with, you know, everything with the reproductive system. What are your tips for somebody who isn't in a space where that's socially acceptable yet, or they're still, you know, coming to terms with where they're at? I want you to serve as an expander of how to really stand in your authenticity or your truth that feels right for you where you are in this moment.
Well, I think it's important for people to look for their own expanders because I think kind of my coming out journey being much later in life, it took me seeing a couple of people both nearby and kind of far away doing it and succeeding and thriving and living that made it easier for me to do that. And if you can't find that, you know, expander easily, don't put pressure on yourself to do it before you're ready.
I agree. Fully.
Yeah, just do it in your own time. And also know that when you do it, that you now have the potential of being an expander for somebody else.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I love that. Mm-hmm. And just, it's so beautiful to be shining in the world. Mm-hmm. So, well, thank you. Thank you. Any last things to let us know about? I feel like you have so many resources that everyone can benefit from. Like, tell us everything.
I feel like, just...
And what are the resources that things, the offerings that people can access from far away? Because that's the number one question.
Totally. All of our coaching services are virtual. So our period coaching, our pregnancy coaching, as well as our lost doula services are available virtually. We're currently working on what it would look like to be in a digital space for our classes. We get asked that all the time. Mm-hmm. So that's something we're really working on. But right now, those would be kind of the easiest, most accessible
Excellent.
Options. Yeah.
Yay. Well, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for joining today. And if today's episode piqued your curiosity about manifestation, head over to freeandnative.com and click on Start Here, where you'll find a video of me giving you all of my recommendations of how to navigate manifestation from here on out. And again, if you liked it, please comment below, review, and share with a fellow manifester. And if you're looking for the like-minded community that you might be manifesting, head over to our Facebook group called The Secret Society. You can find that on our homepage. And make sure to sign up for our newsletter, where we send out new manifestation content and how to digest it and put it into practice twice a month. Have a beautiful day. Thank you.